This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
Welcome to 2025. Looking at the year of 2024. Realize that we had it pretty rough. Lived in Canada for 41 years. And I've never seen our nation's this. And being a history enthusiast, always observing the geopolitical movements in the world, how it affects our individual lives and our own life. Realize that 2025 is going to be more rough. Not exactly sunshines and rainbows for the coming year. But we had a good run of 70 years, 75 years of world peace. We had a very long 3 decades of globalization, which has come to an end. And you should see in the world, countries, nations behave on an aggregate level like the individual. When we are open, when we are receptive, we thrive together. And when countries put up barriers, trade walls, built up their army defenses, things kind of fall apart for everyone. Especially the powerful countries, when they start doing it, everybody else follows suit. And then we have on the aggregate nationalism, which mirrors individualism with our walls and our barriers. Our conflict. And lack of communication with each other. Lack of listening. Lack of openness. And this is where you see military buildup. Economic instability. Social upheaval. Which eventually leads to a world war. Which nation states individually are expressing what the individual at the level of nation states, what individual does when they're into themselves. And we're seeing this around the world in the last few years since the pandemic. The experience of fear during the pandemic has caused many of us, individual level, to become closed and fear. We retreat to our house, cabins, or cells. Put up barriers between each other. Stop connecting. laden with fear, getting sick and dying. And so this collective trauma that we experience on a global scale has caused us as individuals to put up walls, build our castle on a psychic level. Close our minds and our hearts, and we get into groups, and it becomes us versus them. On an individual level, it's me, I need to survive first. And that expressed on the group level, and it is expressed on a national level. In Buddhism, we have two types of karma. There's the individual karma and then the collective karma. What are karmas? Karmas are conditioning, patterns of behaviors, thinking, speaking. That gets expressed. The positive ones are the ones of openness, sharing, cooperation, which in turn help yourself to prosper and everybody else prosper around. And that's what we've seen in the world the last three decades of globalization. We stop seeing each other differences, and we start embracing our common humanity. The yearning to be happier, to have enough to feed ourselves and our children, to have some modicum of comfort. And when we see that happening around the world, in the last three decades, places like China has elevated billions of people out of poverty and starvation. Many third world countries started to prosper, including where I came from. Yeah. Because the world was open at that time, so the more wealthier countries were able to lend. And this can be experienced on an individual level when we practice generosity, openness, compassion, to care for our fellow human beings. And the shock of the pandemic, the trauma of the pandemic, has caused this closing of our minds, our hearts, increase the fear that we experience on a collective level. What can we do watching all of this unfold as an individual, as Zen practice? I was very lucky to grow up in the presence of my teacher, and to be able to sit in the presence of masters like Thich Nhat Hanh. When I was a child, a teenager, he was in his prime of teaching. And I saw him selflessly do the work of the Bodhisattva. Not just resigning to say, my contributions are like a drop of water in the ocean. For him, anything is valuable. any compassionate action, any compassionate thought, any compassionate words, coming out of clarity of each and every individual is compassion. Because it starts with each and every one of us. We can either be sucked in by the masses, by the collective trauma, or we can stand apart as a beacon of clarity and committed action to help change ourselves. And in result, others around. Can't change other people. You can certainly change yourself, but when you change yourself, it usually works like this. When you change yourself and your own karma, your own condition, usually you tend to attract other people who want to change themselves to better their conditioning as well. When you become more clear, more compassionate, more understanding, you attract other people who are going in that direction. And for those who are not going in that direction, they usually bounce off. This is what the Buddha calls collective karma. On an individual level, on a small group level, and in the aggregate amongst nation states. So our collective karma right now in the world is conflict, is fear, is greed and suffering. We have a genocide going on in the Middle East. We have a war in Europe. Possibly soon to be. War in Asia, the far East Asia, where Korea is experiencing, South Korea is experiencing political instability that threatens the whole peninsula. And China is readying itself to invade Taiwan. I'm a student of history. I love history. And I'm seeing all the signs in the whole world. And in the individual, as we live right now. Not a very positive message for 2025, but that is reality. And in the Buddha's time, and in Thich Nhat Hanh's time, especially Thich Nhat Hanh, he was growing up, he went to university in the 60s, late 50s and 60s, and he was a young man of 20. When the Vietnam War was raging, he looked at himself and he said, what can I do? So he started a social movement of people who are engaging in helping others in the war, nonviolently. He calls it engaged Buddhism. I've read accounts and listened to him talk about dodging bullets to bring medicine and supplies and food to places that has active fighting. Him and a small group of volunteers. And when the Vietnamese government, the dictatorship at that time, President Diem, suppressed Buddhism, arrested thousands of Buddhists who was just practicing, celebrating the Buddhist holiday, Misa, the day of the Buddha's birth. Thousands of people were beaten, arrested, detained. Thich Nhat Hanh was there. And if the senior monk Thich Quang Duc hasn't immolated himself in front of the crowd, in front of the whole world, see, nobody would notice what went on in Vietnam at that time. He was a beacon of flame, of compassion that woken the world to the atrocity that was going on, which in turn brought down the government. So, you see, Thich Quang Duc was a meditator. He's been a monk since he was a child. Over 60 years of meditation practice. And you look at it and you go, wow, all those 60 years just to molly yourself. But we see in Thich Quang Duc and Thich Nhat Hanh the example of an individual who changes themselves to practice Zen, disciplines himself, and able to make waves in the world. So we don't resign to see the world suffers and say, I'm just going to be my little bubble. That's not what Zen is about. That's not the Zen that I grew up. My family were refugees, so we came to Canada. And in the refugee community abroad, many of the Buddhist teachers and communities supported us, helped heal the collective trauma of the community, of the nation, got together, practiced together. And was able to overcome the ravages of those traumas in ourselves. And therefore, not creating suffering for ourselves and others. Because trauma is a reality. You're not going to live in life and not experience trauma at some point. Loss is trauma. Separation is trauma. Not getting what you want on a big scale is trauma. Not, you know, suddenly your life is upended and instability is trauma, just like what we experienced during the pandemic. On an individual level and a collective. And what is the Buddha antidote and Zen's antidote to trauma? Clarity. To be able to observe our body and mind. What's going on? Allow it to flow and steer its course and allow it to heal and see things clearly as they unfold. And allow our hearts to open, our mind to unhinge from the limiting beliefs is the process, is the Zen's antidote. In the Buddha's time, there's no shortage of it. Northern India at that time had many small little tribes and states that constantly war with each other, trying to wipe each other out. The Buddha's small clan, the Sakyas, were not excluded. During the Buddha's time, while he was alive, his clan wiped out. He failed to be able to negotiate the peace to save his relatives. And it's not that in that we look at that and we go, oh my God, it's such despair. What's the point? experiencing the spirit and the loss is the point. It's a part of human journey. Experience the frustration, the fear, all of that that comes with having a body and mind and conditioning of a human being. That is the point. We don't get to pick and choose what the environment's going to throw at us, but we can certainly decide to let them go as they pass. And embrace the present fully. So a lot of us, when we turn on the TV, the new YouTube, social media. Oh my God, we got so many mass media these days. We see all of the conflict that's happening in the world. It's very easy to take a position of despair. But always remember, out of the ashes of the Second World War, we had a very long, prosperous run of prosperity. And world peace, and everybody was sitting down, talking to each other, sharing, opening our gates, our hearts, our minds. For almost 75 years. And that was the result of World War II. I mean, there was a Cold War afterwards, but that's sort of like, Do we continue this? Or just kind of both wear each other out? Which exactly happened? They still remember what World War II was like, so they're like, do we really want to fight? That's one of the things that collective trauma brings. On a mass scale of suffering. And this cycle repeats itself over and over again. Why? Because when we don't learn the lesson of history, it tends to repeat. And on an individual level, when we don't learn the lessons of our own karma, that gets repeated over and over again when we're not mindful and watching, it repeats itself again. And then we have the fruits of it. And then we wonder why. How come I got a lemon? Somebody's not watching. So for me, it's very interesting to see all the patterns play out on an individual level, on a global level, on a national level, that it repeats itself again. It's almost like watching a slow train wreck. But you know what? This happens on an individual level too. So you're looking at you saying, no, don't go there. But it still does. It's on that track, right? Unless we decide this got to stop. Unless we stop giving excuses to ourselves that this is not happening. Unless we are acknowledging and stop taking sides of the good and the bad. And say, okay, it's neither good or bad, but when this happens, this happens. Then we realized that I better stop planting that fruit and tending to it, right? So on an individual level and on the collective level, we have a responsibility to ourselves. As Sitting Han said, plant the right seed in your garden and tend the right seed. So you grow flowers instead of cactus. We have a personal responsibility to tend our garden, to be aware of the weeds taking over, to uproot it. So that everyone who comes by it can be saved from allergies. Yeah. So, as a Zen practitioner, you know, it's easy to practice when everything's cool and handy and dandy. There. The real fun starts when chaos arrives. And you see your own reaction, your own body, emotion, sensation, thoughts, perception, response to the input from the external world. Chaos. You're like, whoa, where that came. It's obviously there. Like every garden, the weeds are always there. And when we're not watching, it takes over. When the right condition happens, they come up. So my question is, how long do you want to leave it before you want to take it down? And when I came to Regina, I spent $4,000 cut down 2 feet that, you know, the gentleman who cut it down, they said, these guys are weak. So every time I see those type of trees growing around the garden, I'm like, oh my God, no, don't let it grow. It's going to be $4,000. It doesn't take very long. When we think of weeds, we think of little, you know, dandelions or something. But no, in the gardens of our minds, there are big oak trees that have been growing there for years. Maple, faster. Right? And to cut those down, you gotta take the branches off first. Precariously climb on it. Get the help of other people to cut it down with you because you can't do it alone. Okay? Much tougher to go through the stumps and try to kill the roots in those fiddles. And this is essentially what happens when we're not watching our mind and our mental and, you know, our inner garden. And it gets expressed on an individual level. It first pollutes our own mind, our own body and mind, and then it tries to pollute the ones around it. And if it gets successful, it spread like a virus. Becomes the collective karma of a group, of a nation. ultimately of the whole world. So what can we do as an individual Zen person? Protect our garden from those weeds. Be very selective of the information you receive or believe. Practice clarity before critical thinking, by the way. You gotta clap clarity first. Once you have clarity, the critical and the right thinking, as the Buddha says, comes very easily. And that's in our practice. Our practice in Zen is inquiry. We're constantly questioning our minds, our beliefs. Our responses. See, where is that coming from? How is that happening? What elements give rise to it and continue to let it prosper? We don't care about the why. We really care about how and where. And what it's doing. So coming into 2025, really, it's just a number. But the season is real long. Coming into 2025, seeing the world on a trajectory of suffering, drama, shock, which in turn will affect us in some way because we're all connected. What can you do? What can as an individual to be able to be that big? Be the beacon of light, fire, amidst the dark. Even if it's a little Ellie, it's worth it. What can you do? To be able to bring peace to everyone around you, forget the whole world. We must find our own place. We must accept our humanity. See our conditions for what they are. Not force the change, to have insight into those conditions. To stop denying reality. To stop giving up response. Because this starts with me and it stops with me. And what am I doing to contributing? What am I doing to make it grow? And to learn, how is that happening? I think the how is really important. Because once you get the insight into the how, get uprooted. Like, how's my weed, the weed growing in my garden when I have weed at all? Okay, it's flying from the neighbor. Okay, what can I do to, you know, protect it? So less weed is going to fly over. Right? So the how is really important. And our insights in our practice, the clarity in our insights, give us the how. And it's from the how that we've learned how to respond to the challenges that it presents. A normal way most of us presents ourselves in these challenges is, I'm gonna hunker down, gotta change it. But how it works is the opposite. In the Zen practice, we practice to let go. To accept what's happened. Not resignation. Accept what's happened. And to see what we can do and cannot do. And right action just follows. And this is not a process of thinking, rationalizing. This comes from a process of seeing things clearly. As we say in the Zen practice, small questions leads to small insight. Big question. These life changing. Small doubt leads to small discovery. Big doubt leads to big discovery. Every scientist knows, right? The questions we ask ourselves is, who am I? That's a big question that people have spent ages trying to answer. Philosophy, psychology, science, looking into that. Big question. The inner little laboratory that is life. I find a question that's really is, what's happening now? Not why you think it's happening, but I'm observing that's happening now in body and mind. How's that happening? And if you can answer those two questions, you gain the insight to be able to change, to respond to what it needs. The problem with the world that we have right now, on an individual level and on a collective scale, is that we grab onto all these beliefs and all these filters of what reality is supposed to be. There's a lot of gaslighting. Denial of things of, you know, that's actually happening, and people are like, no, it's not there. or that it's there because of this this reason, you know, one way or another. And our world leaders are kind of like the expression of that collective karma. Unfortunately. So this craziness is experienced on a national scale, on an individual. So as an individual, a Zen practitioner, you must take responsibility. This starts with me. Because I'm one of those grains of sand that built that castle. Even though insignificant. But give me many of those grains, but you've got a scary castle. So for the Buddha, Zen gives no excuse. The practice he teaches is very, very direct. Taking personal responsibility. After clarity. Okay, before clarity, you could say there are some things I can take responsibility for, there's some things I cannot. But after clarity, things starts clearing a lot. And you notice what you can and what you cannot. So this year, I challenge you, as the world is pretty much going into chaos around us. Our next door neighbor, our politics right now, societies, you know, world economies, everything seems to be going chaotic around. And it touches every one of us. No matter if you're living in a rural, a small place, small city like Regina, or you're in the forest like Aja, it touches all of us. Why? Because it causes food inflation. It causes shortage of things. It causes difficulty for each and every one of us on an individual level. So don't think you're immune. So what can we do on an individual level? Clarity. Establish clarity so we can know what we can do. This is the reason why we named our Sangha Clear Ways In. No, it's not a place where the airplane lands. That's one word. Hopefully there's no reinforced barrier at the end. But this is why our Sangha decided on the name Clear Ways In. Because clarity. And from that clarity, insight comes, is where you get the way out. You notice that I grew up in the presence, in the blessings of my teacher and Sitya Khan and the likes of him in the Vietnamese community. A lot of people were practicing engaged Buddhism, doing a lot of volunteering and doing, social activism. And I was kind of like that growing up too. And then I realized that a lot of that was done out of anger and fear. There's no clarity there. The way that Thich Nhat Hanh taught is you got to find clarity first. And from that clarity, you gain the insights, what you can do. And then from that insight, compassion arises. You see yourself as no different than others. That wall starts falling off. And then action flows by itself. So in 2025, I hope that we all aspire to practice in every moment of our day to bring clarity into our present. It's not perfect. You're going to have a lot of moments where it's not clear and you go, oh, shoot, I'm clear. Well, on discovering that, you're actually clear about not being clear. So that's a really good start, by the way. So clarity. And when we have clarity, we can tell the difference between a false argument, a false belief, misinformation, which skewed our perception. And I'm not talking about social media and all the news out there. I'm talking about on an individual level. What we believe in that moment, it's happening. Forget about fake news out there. We're generating our own fake news. Inside. So clarity. I hope this year, with the beginning of this new year, we all aspire to find clarity in our present moment, in everyday life. And and that aspiration. I know it's a want, but you gotta get there somehow. Brings clarity and committed action. And the Eightfold Path will unroll, right? Thank you very much for all your generosity, for all your dedication to the Zen practice. I know I wouldn't be able to get this far. I know, so far, but without the Sangha, without all of you, being dedicated to the practice. And of course, we fall off our path once in a while. Who doesn't? I've lost count. But it's the Sangha, being present here together. Really helps. So, in starting the new year, I like to appreciate all of you, each and every one of you, and the Sangha, because each and every one of us together makes this Sangha. If you don't have clarity, this Sangha will not have clarity. And it is because of your commitment to clarity in your own practice that this Sangha comes to you and has this power to support change and have everybody. Without you, individuals, we wouldn't have this precious Sangha. And in the Buddha's world, one of the three gems. So say, because everybody usually goes, it's the teacher. I'm sorry. You leave the teacher alone and, you know, there's no challenge at all. There's no challenge sitting by yourself in a mountain. The real challenge is other people. As one historian says, hell is other people. So when a whole bunch of people comes together, we're going to bump into each other, you know. Like Ajahn says, you know, when you have a bag of potatoes and it's got these growth, you know, you want it to fall off, we bump it into each other. And that's how the Sangha works. That's how the practice works. And so I asked Aja last time I met him for a board meeting. I said, what happens if, you know, one person doesn't like following the rules? And he goes, they usually don't last very long in the Sangha. They have to be willing to get bumped in and, you know, their edges fall off. Otherwise, they go. And this is the Buddha Sangha. And we're very, very lucky, and I'm very grateful that we have the noble Sangha of people who have experienced Kensho. In the Buddha's teaching, it's called the noble Sangha, Arya Sangha. People who aspire to stay awake. It's not enough that you wake up once. Just aspire. That's to the Buddha's belief, this is most precious. Doesn't have to be big. Have to be a group of people dedicated to harm. And no respect.
that's.
So I hope this year you find lots of clarity. You like find lots of clarity in the chaos. It's more fun to find clarity in the chaos. Right? It's easier to find clarity when the glass of water is sitting there for days. You shake it up a little bit. Try looking through it. That's our prayer. That's the joy of freedom. So roll up your sleeves. Tackle the challenge. In the chaos, find clarity. If you can't do it, call a friend.
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.